Hi, hello everyone. Thank you for joining us today on our Web3 101 talk show. Today we're talking about fractionalized future of NFTs. We have with us Arnav from Nibble and Pratham as well. Just inviting you guys up to speak so you can join us. This is going to be a really fun conversation. I'm always excited when I get to talk about NFTs, and you know, this is not going to be any different. I'm really, really excited to ask some interesting questions and gain some interesting insights concerning what the team over at Nibble is building and how useful this beautiful piece of software is. So Arnav, please give us a really interesting intro about yourself and about the Nibble team and what you're building.
Okay, sure. Yeah, so I'm Arnav, I'm founder of Nibble. Got into crypto while I was still in college in 2017 doing my undergrad. Became really passionate about crypto because it had community, it had tech, it had math, a lot of interesting stuff. And I hustled my way into getting an internship at Gnosis in 2018. Since then, have worked at companies like Byconomy and Zelica, and then started Nibble in 2021. At Nibble, we are building a fractionalization protocol. The main problem statement is that we want to allow multiple people to own an NFT via fractions. And we feel like very large communities and interesting communities can be built around NFT fractions. We are trying to do such an experiment with actually this doodle that you might see on my PFP, where we are going to fractionalize this and get like a lot of people to collectively own this. And yeah, right now we are just about to launch on Polygon and Ethereum. Looking forward to chatting more about what we are building, going a bit deeper as we progress.
Awesome. Thank you so much for that intro. That was a quick mix up between your intro about yourself and intro about Nibble and what's been done. Cool. So I'm curious as to why did you start Nibble? This question might have been phrased differently yesterday, but now I'm more curious as from a vision standpoint, why did you proceed to start Nibble, build, and you're still like waking up and doing everything you do at Nibble today?
Okay, I think like there are two, three perspectives. One is like from a technical perspective, one is from a market opportunity sort of perspective. From a technical perspective, it was a very interesting problem where, I mean, fractionalization had two sort of main problems at the protocol level. One was that fractional tokens that were getting created, because we are not the first ones to do this, right? So there are like other fractionalization players. And even in 2020, when I was just starting to get into NFTs, there was a player called Niftex. And I thought that this is a very good, interesting technical problem where the first problem is that the tokens themselves are not that liquid. And the second problem was that the buyout process was not that efficient. So these were the two main problems at a tech level that excited me to work on Nibble. And that was actually the first point of me just hacking around and thinking on possible solutions for these problems. Then from a market perspective, I thought that, you know, fractionalization is going to be built by someone. Like it exists in the real world. There was this project called Masterworks, for example, that exists where you can you can invest in fine art via, you know, like you invest in stocks. And that platform had a lot of funding. They had a lot of users. And I thought, okay, in crypto, like that, this sort of systems will also be, you know, built because, I mean, NFTs, especially the art and collectible sort of part, is sort of like actually fine art in a way where you're just holding it. You can do interesting things with them online.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but you are holding them, right? So,
mm-hmm.
From a market opportunity perspective, I thought that this protocol will be built by someone. And that's why I sort of was like, okay, this market is going to get big. And then over time, as we were building, we stumbled upon interesting ideas around collective ownership and how, you know, we can, there could be interesting social dynamics at play as well, where you could use fractionalization to create communities around a particular idea that is represented as an NFT or some cause, etc. For example, there have been, like, there's Ukraine DAO, which fractionalized the image of Ukraine's flag, and a community was formed around it. There's Free Ross DAO, which is around Ross Ulbricht, who was the founder of Silk Road, and he had basically, you know, auctioned off an NFT and fractionalized the same. So, I mean, now we are seeing interesting applications, but my initial thought process was this, to be honest, and I was thinking more like from a technical and business perspective, and also I saw that this is not that easy of a problem for just, it's not like you just create fraction, because it sounds easy, but it's not that easy. So I thought, this problem not a lot of people can solve, actually, because not a lot of people are technical enough. Then, I thought that this is a business, this is a good market opportunity as well. So these were the two main reasons.
Cool. It's quite interesting that there is obviously a technical perspective and then there is a business perspective that made you pursue this. I do think the idea of fractionalized NFTs is a really interesting one, as most of the questions I have follow up will tell. And it's interesting to see that Nibble is solving this problem, and I wish you guys all the best of luck. So while I have an idea of what fractionalized NFTs are and what fractionalization of an NFT token is and all of that good stuff, for the sake of the audience and maybe for the sake of some of the places I might be ignorant even, how did the concept of fractionalization come to be, or more specifically, the concept of NFT fractionalization come to be?
Like in general or to me? That's
yeah. Well, what your thoughts are, as far as you know, as far as, like, you know, your thoughts, your exposure, your awareness of the idea and the concept.
Yeah, okay, got it. I mean, let's see. I think Niftix were the first ones, actually, in 2020 that started working on fractionalization. Before that, also, there were some ideas floating around. But the thing is that fractionalization, I mean, it only started making sense when NFT as an asset class sort of started emerging. So if you look at the history of NFTs, I mean, I was there when OpenSea just was launched, and there were, like, you know, these, or there were some other marketplaces as well. And there was not much traction. You know, CryptoKitties was the only major event in 2017. And apart from that, there was just nothing. And then in 2020, we started seeing, you know, punks getting great volume, and then crypto art, actually 1:1 art, was getting popular. And I think around that time only, as NFTs were emerging, as the value of some of the NFTs was, you know, going through the roof, the idea of fractionalization sort of started coming to the picture. Before that, if there was sort of, like, the NFT market itself was so small that fractionalization market is like a subset of the NFT market. So that would have been so, like, pretty small. So I mean, that's when people started thinking, okay, that they would like to collectively own some rare NFT. And, like, yeah, there could be some interesting ideas around, you know, fractionalizing, creating pieces of the same. So Niftix, I think they were in June 2020 or something around that time when they launched their V1, or they were launched the beta or something. And they got pretty popular, actually, at one point. I remember one of the largest, like, the person was holding highest number of, or one of the largest number of sandbox parcels. They had fractionized something. There was a very rare Axie that was fractionalized, a very rare punk. It was the alien punk, I think. One alien punk, which was very, you know, which was very, it was very, very rare, basically. So that was fractionalized. And then from there, I felt like, yeah, it sort of started picking up. But then again, the problem with Niftix and why, I mean, the protocol itself was pretty basic, like how the trading and the buyouts were happening. It was not great, actually. The buyout process was like, it was really messed up. Like, you, in order to reject someone's buyout was almost impossible on Nutex. So yeah, that's how I started picking off. Then Niftex also came up with their own version, version 2. Again, that also had a lot of issues. It had good UX. Like, before that, even the UX was very bad, actually. Yeah, so that's how it started picking off. It just started picking off with the NFT market, as, you know, we saw people's $69 million sale. There was some other, you know, art pieces. And,
Okay, cool. Why don't you visualize? I thought maybe my network
was... No, there was... I got it.
Yeah, call. No. yeah, okay, cool. So, yeah, that's an interesting background to all of the idea of fractionalization of NFTs. And I think, you know, I think it's a cool idea and a cool design from a technical standpoint that we're able to do this, knowing the... In the default nature of NFTs, which is a single unique token that, you know, is unique to itself. And when you introduce fractionalization, you are able to split that token, which gives everyone a piece. It's like having a plot of land, and then you're able to carve out like different portions, you know, from that plot of land to separate individuals who are interested in buying and having ownership on a piece of land. And that's an interesting idea. However, though, one of the things I'm curious about and is an idea that I don't know if it's possible to explore. If it is ethical, that's a completely different conversation. But if it's possible to explore, will be having a fractionalized version of an NFT to gain, what would you call it, access into, say, a DAO, for example. So to further bring this home, like the developer DAO, for example, has, to gain access, a user needs to purchase a single NFT. And then the NFT goes through the, it's verified by this Discord bot where you're able to, you know, it goes through your wallet, checks that you have the NFT. And if it says that you have the NFT, then boom, you gain access into the DAO. So point is there a world that exists where having a fraction of an NFT that gives access to a DAO gives you access to the DAO? Or is that not a solution we should be exploring? Is it technically impossible to do that? Or is there a way the privileges of this DAO needs to be designed for this to be possible?
My question to this would be like, why do you want to use fractions instead of, like, for example, just using in the NFT here? Like,
obviously. So my first response is I'm just curious. Second response would be, say this token runs out, right? It's limited. I think it's capped at, 10,000 perhaps. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you don't want to lose your ownership to this token, but you want to get more people in, perhaps.
Yeah.
You're able to fraction, you know, have that in fraction, and people can, you know, get access to the same piece of valuable information without you losing access to it. So that is one reason, for example.
Got it. That's actually a very valid reason. And I mean, okay. So it's a very simple way you can do it, actually. This is something which we were discussing with someone who runs, like, you know, a token gated group as well. And the thing with them also is that they have, you know, some number of NFTs that they have already given out, and they don't want to dilute the overall supply also, right? That you don't want to dilute from 10,000 to make it 50,000 or something. I mean, that can be one solution. If you're fine with that, I think you can just, when you are deploying the NFT contract, then only you can, for example, when you're deploying the NFT contract, only then you can specify that there is a minting function and you can mint new NFTs. And or another thing you could do potentially is you can create another, you know, set of NFTs, like, for future, if that is not the case. And in the Discord bot itself, you can somehow collaborate. Change the settings that maybe there can be two NFTs that can be used for token gating. And so that is one solution. But if you don't want to do that, you don't want to release a new NFT collection, or you don't want, I mean, your original, you don't want to dilute the original NFT owners. You can potentially, like, someone can take their NFT and fractionize it, and
in the Discord itself, like, let's say you want to create, you know, some sort of, like, you want to create a sub-community, for example, then mm-hmm. can in that Discord, you can have one channel, which is token-gated, but the token gating is done via the fractional token, because fractional token is just an ERC20 token, for example, in our mm-hmm. case. It can be some other token as well, like for example, fractional.art, they are now moving to ERC1155 for fractional tokens. So, I mean, sure, it can, fraction token can be like ERC1155, ERC20, whatever. But in our case, for example, it's ERC20, and you can create a sub-community within that particular DAO using the fractional token as for token gating. So that is definitely possible. You can, and the advantage of this would be if you don't want to dilute the original supply, and like you want to keep your current NFT holders happy, right? Because they might have bought into something and they don't want to get their, you know, original NFTs diluted, like the value of the NFTs, but you don't also want to only just limit, you know, the members to 10,000. You might have, like, give the original 10,000 people access to everything, but you might want to, you know, also include new members for some things, like you want some customizability there. So for that use case, you can actually take a fractional NFT, have a lot of, you know, define what token gating amount you want for the same. Like, for example, you're getting 100 tokens from that NFT. You can say if you hold minimum 5 tokens, only then you'll be able to access this channel or whatever. So that is definitely possible. But I feel like, yeah, it depends a lot on the use case. And it might not be the best solution to use fractionalization here. Like,
also, it has to be thought through ahead of time. So it's sort of like thought into the design of the smart contract, right? Because again, I think an NFT like the developer DAO NFT, you know, for example purposes, has been deployed and it's a smart contract, an NFT that exists. So can that itself be fractionalized?
Okay,
then it needs to be written into the structure of the DAO itself, and they need to, you know, approve it as a what would you call it, as a means of getting access into the DAO.
Yeah, that is actually pretty easy, I think. Yeah, that is like off-chain, right? That is not even on-chain. Like, when you are verifying that you can use Collabland and you can, like, I think, I'm not familiar with Collabland right now. Like, I used it a long time back, but I think you can have multiple token gating options there. So it's just very easy to do that, actually. Yeah. So it's, fractionation might make a lot of sense if you have already deployed the contract and you want to get new members, etc. But if you are maybe just starting off and you think that, you know, in future you might want to get more members in the community, then it might make sense to, you know, just in the contract have some minting function or do some, just think about it, you know, I mean, like the design. Yeah,
really cool. I think some of the interesting things, you know, especially when we're thinking about, you know, a solution like this, but I'm also thinking about the problems that might come off out of this, one of which will be if and when NFT owners are able to fractionalize their NFTs, there could be some form of monopoly or inflation in price. Inflation is the right word. So again, when the commodity is scarce, I have an NFT and then, you know, a lot more demand is there. I can choose to sell it a fraction of it, right? So like 5-10 times higher because everyone wants a piece of this cake at this point in time. And there's nothing you can really do about that because, you know, there's a sovereign power of the individual to choose to auction or sell these tokens at these prices. But so yes, these are interesting ways to sort of think about the potential problems that might arise with this particular solution.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that is definitely possible. And, but I feel like that's not a tech problem, that's a social problem, and I feel like
absolutely. Yeah. We've moved past like the tech side of it, you know, that becomes a social problem of the individual and other things to think about. Apparently, you know, from your explanation, the tech side of things are solvable, they are possible, the possibility is there. Is it necessary? That's a different question relative to how relative to the problem trying to be solved. So yes, that does make sense.
Even on social side, actually, I feel like that how markets usually work is that, like for example, in crypto, I think there's something that comes, there's like boom, like lot of hype, and there's
mania,
right? For example, hoping that mania we can get for fractionalization, but and then there is like you know correction, big correction or something.
Yes.
And then you know there comes like the Gartner hype cycle or whatever you want to call it, I don't know, but there's then stability, there is maturity in the market understands what sort of use cases this does actually solve, what's the you know advantage of this. For example, we got liquidity mining. I mean, liquidity mining had a lot of mania. It's still getting used somewhere, right? I mean, not that much, but somewhere it's getting used. We had play to earn games. I mean, so much hype, so much money put into games by VCs and like, you know, et cetera. But like it crashed down. Again, it's not like it will just die down. There is some sustained usage and it will still continue. So I think like, for example, this problem that you're saying that people might pay very high, I think that already has happened actually with fractionalization, that people did pay like very, very high amounts for fraction tokens because there was so much hype and they got burned. And now, like, I mean, I feel like it has sort of hit the correction and we will see some more sustainable and use cases, and market also sort of understands like that it doesn't make sense to buy at a very high premium, even a fractional token.
Yeah, it makes sense that. So yeah, even as much as you could possibly inflate the price, it is subject to what the market is, what everyone else is selling same token for. So that is there to be considered as well. So yesterday, one of the things you talked about that I really, really like was, I mean, at first I was like, hey, but then eventually when you explained that, when we went through the demo, what's pretty interesting was the idea of delaying the sellout or the buyout rather of a single NFT, you know, is the will and the typical buyer. So preventing the will from having monopoly over a particular asset where everyone comes together as a community and they prevent that. So for everyone listening, if you weren't in our, explain like I'm five session over on our Discord, which you can join on the Dapplist Twitter account and you can find our Discord. Arnav here walked us through one of the really cool features of Nibble, which is buying out. So buying out basically means while there are fractions, while everyone can own fractions of an NFT, a single individual, it will possibly can come in and buy the entire NFT and own that. However, the interesting thing with this is the buy order or the sell order isn't initiated immediately. There's a time period between when the community gets to decide if they think this particular token is worth or if they would rather have someone else have monopoly over this token, or they buy up the price and they outbid the current whale who wants to buy the NFT. I think that's really, really interesting. So I'm just mentioning that for, you know, FYI for everyone here listening, that, you know, the buyout implementation by the team about Nibble is really cool. Really, pretty cool. So from a technical standpoint, we just dive into some technical jargons here. We don't have to go in depth. How does the fractionalization work? So there is an NFT and then it is broken down into multiple tokens. And you as an individual get to decide how many tokens it is broken down into. And when that NFT is broken down, does it remain, do fractions of that NFT have the same, what would you call it, identity as the parent NFT, right? So it's like, do they have DNAs? So the fractions become children. Do they have DNAs of like the parent NFT, or are they just completely different tokens, right? By nature of the design of software, but they are, you can trace their ancestry to that parent NFT, if this makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, the process is actually very simple. So what happens is that when you are fractionalizing, you lock the NFT in a smart contract and you are creating ERC-20 tokens that are, you know, from that smart contract itself, actually, in our system, for example. So the NFTs are linked. I mean, you can see that these tokens, what's the contract address, and you can find this one that has, you know, the NFT also in it. And yeah, there is then trading that happens actually in our system again on that smart contract itself, because we have like that inbuilt AMM, which is like a, you know, bank or bonding curve. And there are buyout, and in the case that a buyout happens, for example, where someone, you know, is able to successfully bid and successfully bid on the fractions NFT, then the NFT can be unlocked by them from the smart contract to their wallet. And money they actually provided from the for the buyout, it gets locked in the smart contract, and the people who held the tokens, they are able to redeem their tokens for the money they put in. So that's the process. I don't know how much you guys can visualize, but it's a very simple way. It's like there's just a smart contract that has all the logic, and when someone is fractionalizing, the NFT gets locked, and there is logic there, how the tokens get traded, how the buyout happens, etc., etc. You can see, you know, these tokens are backed by the NFT. And actually, we are also introducing some interesting things. We are going to support ERC-1155 soon. But one which we have done also is we have created sort of a new ERC-20 token standard in a way for fractional tokens. It's a very simple, actually, ERC-20 token standard. It just has a image hash variable. And in that variable, you can actually add the image, like the original person, when fractionalizing, or even actually after fractionalizing. They can add the image hash. So like, yeah, that is also there. I mean, so you can basically see what NFT it is that you're buying.
Right. So does that also mean when you make fractions of these NFTs, is it relative to the value of the current NFT? So a typical example would be the doodle you have on your PFP. Let's assume it's $1,000, right? When you make fractions of it, does the smart contract know how much this NFT is worth, and does it divide every single fraction, and then it's relative to the total? So $50,000, let's say you make five fractions of it, does it know that every one of those fractions should be sold for $10,000, as it represents what the market sees?
Okay, so...
Or do you test the price as an individual? And if it's custom, sorry to cut you off, if the price is made custom, how exactly is that? Does that affect the actual value of this NFT?
Yeah, so price is custom because getting price of an individual NFT on chain is not possible yet. There are protocols working on like appraisal protocols, for example, Upshot and etc., that are trying to, you know, make it... possible to get
the price.
Price. But right now, that's not possible. So that we are just leaving to the, you know, original NFT fractionalizer, how much price they want to their fractions at to start trading. So for example, you can allow the trading to happen around, let's say, you know, if it's a doodle, you know, around 80 ETH or something like that. And once that is, the original person can set the initial fractionalization point. And once that is set, you can basically, you know, the market decides the price. I mean, if they're going to buy, let's say you set, and like you can set the initial valuation and supply. So let's say, you set a valuation of 10 ETH and you are creating 10 initially. So the price was 1 ETH. And as people buy in, like let's say you put in 1 ETH, you will get not actually 1 ETH, you will get like, let's say 0.95 ETH. Then the next person, when they put in 1 ETH, will get around 0.9 ETH or something like that. So it's like a bonding curve. And yeah, like as that happens, the market can just start trading, you know, buying and selling. And as there is buying and selling, there are also some other things that are on the platform. Like the original person, they also earn some royalty whenever there is trading, etc. But that's another point. So that thing, actually, the original person can customize how many fractions they want to create, what should be the value of them, etc. That is just completely customizable, and then, you know, it's up to the market if they want, if they value it at that price and they want to participate in buying that actually.
Yeah. So that means when this is done, so this is pro and con. Pro means you can increase the price relative to the market by the fractions. When, if you do the math, if the individual does the math correctly, the entire fraction when it's totaled could be potentially more than what the NFT could be sold for as a single whole. However, let's assume this, it's being custom and it's not being, the price isn't what the market says, higher or lower. Doesn't, you know, we wouldn't, it's not a big of a deal. When the buyout is initiated, is it initiated on the true value of the NFT based off the market? Or again, this is based off of what the individual has custom set?
Buyout is triggered on whatever valuation it is the token is trading right now. So there could be a scenario the value of, like, let's say Doodle's floor is 10 ETH, but the fraction is, let's say, trading at 5 ETH, right? And if a buyout is triggered, it will be triggered at 5 ETH. Or there could be a scenario also there's the token is getting triggered at 100 ETH. It will be triggered at 100 ETH. So that is just on the value of the, it's like our own economy, like it's independent of what's happening outside the system.
Just wanted to know that. Okay, cool. So essentially, when an NFT becomes fractionalized, it exists in, as its own entity outside of what the entire ecosystem says about it. Does that rhyme? Does that apply?
Yeah, cool.
So, you know, are these, and obviously this from the explanation and everything that we've gone over, it's not entirely the case that these fractionalization of NFTs are necessarily restricted to piece of art, because we talked about DAOs and we talked about primarily DAOs. So I want to use let's think of a different use case, right? Let's say a piece of land or a piece of an apartment, for example. Let's say this is 2030. We're living in a very digitalized future where everything has an NFT, right? You head over to New York, you need to purchase, you need to pay for rent in an apartment, and you're issued a fraction of a whole NFT that represents the entire apartment. You know, saying that in itself is actually pretty damn cool. However, so, but you know, it's now, it exists on the blockchain and stuff. And then a different example would be a whole NFT exists, and then you want to purchase a piece of land, and then you're given a fraction of that piece of an NFT that is relative to the land. What do you think about that entire concept?
So you're saying fractionization of real estate, basically, and will that happen as well in future, right? That's the... Sure. I think that will have a bit of a different direction of what is happening with NFT process and what we are doing. I mean, for that use case, I feel like you don't even need like a 1:1 NFT and then, you know, fractionalize it or something. Just probably 1155 sort of base tokens would be better. Fractionation of real estate has been proposed, by a lot of people. Like, since 2017, I have been in the space, and I have seen, like, you know, someone has been trying to solve it. Like, every few years I've found, like, find people. But I think the issue there is actually not on the tech side, etc. It's on the legal and the regulatory and etc. side. People might even buy it. It's just that I don't think it's possible to take real world assets and sell tokens on blockchain. Like, the government has, like, too much power with real world assets, you know. It's like it's a bit challenging. So I think it's the legal aspect of things, how you can actually do it is not exactly clear, because you are essentially creating like securities of a home, and that can, like, the government is pretty like serious about legal and real estate and stuff. So mean, yeah, I think that's the main issue. Like, there are a lot of platforms actually that have tried to do this, but yeah, it's not worked out because of legal reasons.
Cool. So, well, you know, I think from it sounds plausible, but I guess we'll be looking at more deeper issues than just the technical feasibility of that. Cool. So, Anna, what were some of the interesting issues or some of the interesting problems you had to solve while you were building Nibble? And did any of these bottlenecks, these bugs, end up being features?
I think the biggest one, let's see, it has to be auditing, actually, I would say. I mean, finding good auditors is like really crazy. And like the thing with smart contract development, I mean, I did work at some companies, but I didn't, you know, I didn't understand a lot of things about the overall processes and stuff because I was not like, you know, yeah, I didn't have an idea on the business side and also on the tech side both and overall timing and stuff. And this is something which I had to learn also, with wherein it's very different from, you know, full stack sort of development, front end, back end development. And basically, the thing is that, life cycle is very big for smart contract development. And you have to, because you, for example, you have an audit time, you have to wait for, you know, we have to wait for like 3 months, you have to apply for an audit 3 to 6 months before, then you have to plan your life cycle accordingly. And after the audit also, there might be some changes, then you might want to do a bug bounty. So for example, for our case, we did an audit. And then we, you know, also did a bug bounty. And then we were like, okay, then now we are confident we can launch. And that was not a very smooth process. For example, once we audited our protocol, we were also not sure on whether this is all what we are going to publish before main launch. So we did a beta program where we tested some things out. We tried to understand like user behavior. Then we made some small changes, and then we actually went for the public audit on Code Arena. And then now after that, we are not making any changes, of course. But that itself, the life cycle is very big, and you have to be really patient. And the quality of code, for example, there has to be 100% test coverage. You have to follow all the best practices, and the smart contract sort of, you know, also the tech stack is still not that mature. You know, it's still getting developed. So that is also something which is something which you have to keep in mind. And we have like most of this work, like, actually, all of the work was done by one person. I was working on the architecture side, but all the code was written by one engineer, which is also amazing. I mean, he has done a good job. And yeah, like it was, I think that has been, it has been really stressful, to say the least. And you are all, as a protocol, you're always worried of hacks and everything. But luckily, in our public audit, we didn't find any high bug, like high risk bug. We found some very basic bugs, which didn't put any, like, you know, funds at risk. So that was really good, because usually when I look at Code Arena and some bounties, there we find some, you know, everyone, like, even for example, one of our advisors, he's a code dev at Sushi. He was also telling me, and we also looked at Sushi's like bounty, they had like quite a lot of bugs actually. Obviously our system might not be as complex as Sushi's trying, but still it was quite a good validation that, you know, that we have written good.
You're doing some things right.
Yeah.
Awesome, cool. It's very, you know, it's humbling, and it's also liberating to realize that even though there are interesting, more complex protocols, you were able to write software that wasn't as buggy as theirs, perhaps. Awesome. Yeah. Cool. Again, so first off, thank you everyone for joining us so far. This has been really, really fun. We will be winding down and just like turning things down as we come towards the end of today's Web3 101 session.